Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. The late New York State budget will be a little later. Lawmakers approved a second short-term funding extension this week as negotiations continue in Albany. The budget was supposed to be in place April 1st. The latest extension continues current funding levels through Monday. Democrats, who control the Assembly and Senate, have not reached agreement with Governor Kathy Hochul on the spending plan, with housing and education funding among the issues holding up a deal. As the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports, one of the many sticking points remaining in the spending plan is how to crack down on growing instances of retail theft.
Governors in New York often include unrelated policy items in their state budget proposals, and Kathy Hochul is no exception. That's when they have the most leverage with the legislature to get their agenda approved. Hochul is proposing new, stiffer penalties for retail theft, including making it a felony to assault a store employee. She held a news conference with small retail store owners earlier in March.
These individuals are very exposed, especially in a small shop with just one worker. They don't have any way to protect themselves. They're literally on the front line. And under this law, assaulting a retail worker would carry the same elevated penalties that we have in place for assaulting a first responder.
It's part of a $45 million plan that includes authorizing the state police to investigate and prosecute interstate and even international organized retail theft rings. Hochul wants to spend $25 million of that amount to hire more troopers. But Democrats in the Senate and Assembly are reluctant to increase criminal penalties. Neither House included them in their budget plans. Both leaders of the legislature are African American, and they've said repeatedly that they're wary of any criminal justice law changes that could disproportionately impact Black and brown New Yorkers. Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stort-Cousins says there are better ways to reduce retail theft, like providing funds for stores to hire more security guards.
What we are trying to do is figure out ways that we can really cut into this retail theft, the organized retail theft, certainly, and also help retail establishments to be able to bolster their security and help local police forces to help them, retailers, to be able to abate the crime. So I think we are all very serious about this, and we don't want any worker hurt anywhere.
Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie says in the past, raising penalties for certain crimes has not decreased the rate of their occurrence. He says it's more important to look at the root causes of crime and improve the education system and provide better mental health treatment.
Be open to talking about organized crime rings that people have, but I just don't believe raising penalties is ever a deterrent on crime. You stop anybody in the street and ask them what's the penalty for assaulting anybody, and they probably won't even be able to answer you.
Senator Stort-Cousins and Speaker Hastie backed the 2019 bail reform laws. They did agree, though, in last year's final budget deal to include Hochul's proposal to alter that law, and they added back some crimes to the list of felonies that are bail eligible. There's also a larger political context playing out in state budget talks. The 2024 elections will feature several hotly contested congressional races. Democrats are looking to win back four seats that flipped to Republicans in 2022. And suburban voters will be key in those races. Polls have shown that rising crime is a key concern. The head of the state Republican Party, Ed Cox, is already highlighting the Democrats' dispute over cracking down on retail theft. In a statement, Cox took issue with Speaker Hastie's opposition to raising criminal penalties, saying the comments illustrate the Democrats' moral rot. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt for the New York Public News Network.
Meanwhile, some lawmakers are seeking to include legislation that would regulate short-term rentals across New York in the state budget. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard reports.
Hello, everyone. Good morning, and thank you.
State Senator Michelle Hinchey opened Tuesday's press conference at the state capitol discussing her legislation to create a statewide registry of short-term rental properties.
We are having a large conversation about a housing crisis, And a core component of the housing conversation is the short-term rental market.
Hinchey's 41st Senate District includes much of the Mid-Hudson region, where many communities have been experiencing sharp increases in housing prices. Hinchey was joined by fellow Democrat Pat Fahey, whose 109th Assembly District includes the city of Albany. Fahey, now running for state Senate, said Hinchey is giving a boost to short-term rental legislation she introduced 7 years ago.
While we see estimates, while we have, there are some local registries, we do not have a firm grasp of exactly how many short-term rentals there are. And in those 7 years, we have hit even more of a housing crisis.
Assemblywoman Carrie Warner's 113th district includes the tourism hub of Saratoga Springs. Democrats said the summer place to be welcomes nearly a million visitors a year. Warner said the home of Saratoga Racecourse has more than 3,000 hotel rooms and about 1,000 short-term rentals as the city debates enacting its own regulations. While vacation rentals have long been a part of the Saratoga Springs ecosystem, Warner said the short-term rental market is pushing out housing opportunities for permanent residents.
We are losing important housing stock to these short-term rentals. Try to find an affordable apartment in Saratoga Springs. I dare you. Try to find an affordable apartment. They don't exist anymore.
In addition to creating a statewide registry, the legislation would allow counties to tax short-term rentals like hotels. Democratic Ulster County Executive Jed Metzger said the added revenues could boost efforts to make the Hudson Valley County more affordable.
Last year, I proposed and we now have established a housing action fund in Ulster County to expand the stock of affordable housing for our residents. And, you know, this legislation would enable us to collect a few million more dollars in taxes that could go toward this fund and could go toward addressing the housing crisis in our communities.
The city of Kingston in Ulster County recently reached its 1% cap on short-term rentals. Albany Mayor Kathy Sheehan, who serves as president of the New York Conference of Mayors, called the lack of a statewide registry a public safety issue. The third-term Democrat drew a distinction between local property owners who rent their own space with anonymous companies that make it difficult to track down an owner in the case of an emergency or raucous parties and disruptive guests.
That makes not only the people in the neighborhood feel unsafe, the people going to that event don't know who the owner is. There's oftentimes very challenging for us to find that owner to ensure that we're holding them accountable.
The hotel industry is also in support of the legislation. Mark Dorr is president of the New York State Hospitality and Tourism Association. He said short-term rentals fill a need that hotels cannot always address.
There are parts of the state where a hotel isn't viable to build because they don't have enough business in that area year-round to do that. So there are pockets, large pockets of the state that need short-term rentals.
The bill does have its opponents. The Travel Technology Association, a group that advocates on behalf of short-term rental and travel sites, including Airbnb, says it has unsuccessfully sought a reasonable consensus with the lawmakers, including Hinchey and Fahey, on statewide legislation. Association CEO Laura Chadwick said in a statement, quote, "Despite these sincere efforts, these policymakers continue to focus on instituting a complex system of regulation that would hurt the upstate economy, make travel more expensive, and reduce the income potential for thousands of New Yorkers who rent their homes to make ends meet," end quote. Expedia Group, the company that owns and operates short-term rental site Vrbo, said in a statement it, quote, "supports vacation rental policies that balance community needs with the benefits of a healthy, diverse tourism economy. We encourage policymakers to engage with the short-term rental community to identify solutions that account for its significant economic and cultural contributions across New York," end quote.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
You You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. This week, I sat down with New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli, and we began by talking about the late state budget and whether the final decision-making still comes down to three people in a room.
Well, you know, of course, I'm nowhere near the room these days, being the controller, so I can only reflect on more of, you know, kind of the echo chamber of what I hear. I'd say it's similar to too many of the years that I was there, where, especially when you would blow through the deadline, of April 1st, the conversations became more intense at a staff level and at a leadership level, but the members seemed to be less and less aware of what exactly is on the table. And, you know, I think that makes it a challenge for the members who really are there to, you know, fight for their constituency, fight for their important issues. It makes it tough for the press to be able to report on, you know, what's real in terms of, you know, because, of course, at this point, the options will be narrowing and, you know, the choices will be narrowing because they are trying to close it down. But if the press isn't aware of what the details are, that means the public isn't aware. So the opportunity for the public perhaps to react to some of the options that are being considered becomes much more limited. You know, I have to say there were some years where there was more openness than others. When I was in the legislature, I do remember there was a time where the conference committee process, you know, in its beginnings was, you know, really pretty active, and members, majority and minority, both houses would sit together and come up with recommendations, you know, to leadership on budget allocations, and there was more direct member involvement. That seems to have gone by the wayside. So, you know, we are, you know, into the first week of April. We also know, David, that in Albany, things could get done very quickly when there's the, you know, momentum to close down a deal. I hope that happens. You know, the uncertainty for local governments, for state employees, when a budget process stays open for more than a couple of days, creates a lot of anxiety. So let's hope we can move forward sooner than later.
That's New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Monday's total solar eclipse could be one of the biggest events in the Adirondacks in decades. Many hotels, motels, and short-term rentals have been booked for more than a year. One of the top destinations is Tupper Lake, where the Legislative Gazette's Emily Russell talked to folks about what they're expecting.
Tupper Lake is taking the eclipse very seriously. Drive around and you'll see billboards and big traffic signs about the event, shops advertising eclipse glasses and other merch. The town of about 5,000 people is hosting two of the largest eclipse events in the park, one at the Adirondack Sky Center and Observatory, and another at the Wild Center. That's where I meet Leanne Favreau.
How much of your life lately has been consumed by the eclipse?
All of it. I feel like the eclipse is eclipsing my life in some respects. It is in my home life and my work life. It's all eclipse right now.
Favreau is the manager of interpretive programs here at the Wild Center. She says they've been prepping for the eclipse for years.
Every department at every level has been planning for new merchandise in the store to new exhibits on our floor to bringing in the Corning Museum of Glass, who's going to be here all weekend. It has been an all-hands-on-deck collaborative effort.
The Wild Center says about 4,500 people have reserved spots for the day of the eclipse. That event is free of charge. The Sky Center says it, too, is expecting thousands of visitors. Businesses in the Adirondacks could see a real boost this weekend. Racket River Brewing is a popular spot in Tupper Lake. Co-owner Mark Jesse says they've brewed a special beer and they'll be fully staffed. But Jesse says he's managing expectations and he's not even opening until after the eclipse.
We're all going to be either out in our parking lot or at home or wherever enjoying it. And then some of us are going to be coming into work for 4 o'clock and trying to hopefully deal with the masses of people. And I've told everybody, you know, if we have to shut the door because we can't handle the volume, we shut the door.
Jesse says he's been impressed by all the marketing and organization that's gone into the event. He and others give a lot of credit to Roost, the regional tourism office in the Adirondacks. But still, there are a lot of unknowns going into Monday's eclipse.
There's no way to predict exactly what's going to happen. So we're just going to do the best we can and hope that people are patient and kind. And we all get along and get through this and actually enjoy it.
Of course, there are a lot of folks preparing for what happens if things do go wrong. One concern is traffic. There are only three roads in and out of Tupper Lake. The whole park is pretty rural and isolated. Eric Prue is Tupper Lake's chief of police. He says they do have experience dealing with large crowds. And the key is just to be prepared and patient, especially after the eclipse.
We'll deal with it like we've done before in the past when, you know, we used to deal with thousands of people at the Woodsman's Days and traffic backed up for hours because we closed the roads for a parade. Traffic clears itself up after a while. You just have to take your time.
Another concern is over medical emergencies. The closest hospital from Tupper Lake is 20 miles east in Saranac Lake. There are only a handful of hospitals in all of the Adirondacks. Back at the Wild Center, Leanne Favreau says they've decided to take extra precautions during the day of the eclipse.
We made the call kind of towards the end of the game here to bring on EMTs and make sure that we have medical service, trained medical response teams on site, which I think has relieved a lot of stress for our staff, just knowing that we have trained professionals here to help our visitors if they need it.
One thing that's not lost on everyone I talk to is just how amazing this moment could be. Not for business or for the region, but just from a human perspective. Favreau and I are talking in a room with a big glowing orb that's hanging from the ceiling. She uses a tablet to program what the orb looks like.
So we've got sun, we have moon, we have earth. Let me see, we've got some other...
Then she programs the earth so it has lots of thin, colorful lines arcing across the continents. Each line reflects the path of totality of a recent solar eclipse.
So this is looking at all the eclipses that have taken place from 2010 to 2030, the pathways that you can see. So you can just see how these little rare snippets of getting to view the total solar eclipse across the globe. They happen all the time. But in our backyards, once in every 375 years, if we're lucky.
And on Monday, we will be lucky. So she says we better enjoy it. In Tupper Lake, I'm Emily Russell for the New York Public News Network.
Meanwhile, the town and city of Plattsburgh are in the path of totality during Monday's total eclipse and are planning events and viewing sites with an influx of visitors expected. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley has more.
The city of Plattsburgh will experience totality for over 3.5 minutes, one of the longest durations in New York State. Officials have designated the city beach as its official viewing site and are warning residents to expect increased road congestion. A shuttle has been organized to transport people from remote parking areas to the beach, where food trucks and bands will play. Director of Community Development Courtney Meisenheimer says city officials are confident they are ready for solar viewers.
Our fire department, our police department are ready to act accordingly with an increased amount of people coming into the area. If that means, you know, mitigating traffic, responding to emergencies, you know, we're looking at this from a regional approach, and emergency services, you know, have been coordinating on a regional level for quite some time just in preparation for this. Otherwise, the main event is the actual eclipse itself. We're hoping that people will come down to the beach, you know, maybe they'll bring some lawn chairs, they'll get some food and just enjoy the music and enjoy the atmosphere, take a walk down along the beach boardwalk, and just really utilize this great amenity that our city has.
Supervisor Michael Cashman says Katyville Park is the town of Plattsburgh's official viewing site. He has been getting calls from as far as Rhode Island requesting information about visiting.
To put it in perspective, Clinton County is about 80,000 people. We should see a significant influx over that three-day period, but specifically at the total solar eclipse. The state has shared some numbers. There's a number of other websites and resources that have published things. One of the higher numbers that I've seen is that the general area could see upwards of 180,000 people. Now, that's probably the larger Adirondack region. There are a lot of different events that are going on throughout the Adirondack coast and the greater Plattsburgh region. most studies, because other communities have had these events in the past, will travel about 200 miles to go to the Path of Totality. So if it's a beautiful day, it may inspire more people to show up.
To the south of Plattsburgh, Essex County officials have declared a precautionary state of emergency from 9 a.m. Saturday through 9 a.m. Wednesday. Board of Supervisors Chair Sean Gilliland says with a tremendous number of people coming to the area, it will allow the county a greater ability to react if an emergency arises.
If everything goes smoothly and there are no issues, it has really no effect, but we're just in a position to react for whatever comes our way. And in this situation, we don't know what it is. It's not like an ice jam on a river, a forest fire, flooding or anything else like that. We don't know what's going to happen with this massive influx of people. So we just decided, let's be ready for anything.
This is not the first time Meisenheimer will view a solar eclipse. She was in Portland, Oregon during totality a few years ago.
It was kind of spiritual. As it gets darker and darker, you start to notice that the birds, you know, are quieter and quieter. And it's like the animals start noticing that something is a little bit different. And then during totality, it's just a moment of awe. I just remember sitting with myself and just sort of witnessing it and enjoying just having to think of nothing at all except for what I was experiencing at the moment. And then it all kind of reverses itself in this cool way. So maybe that all sounds a little bit goofy, but it's a really, really wonderful experience, both scientifically but also spiritually. And I'm really excited for folks who haven't experienced this. And it's so special that we're in the path this year.
The partial eclipse will begin in Plattsburgh at 2:14 Monday afternoon, with totality beginning at 3:25 p.m. and lasting 3 minutes, 44 seconds.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gostina. Well, April is Autism Acceptance Month. And the Legislative Gazette's Samantha Simmons has a story now of one local 16-year-old and his family.
It was kind of heartbreaking not being really able to explain to him, you know, that you're going to this school where you're going to be living, and then switching to Anderson when your spot becomes available. But, you know, then once you start Anderson, this is going to be, you know, until you're 21. There was really no way to explain it to him.
That's Amy Feller. She and her husband, Josh Feller, say placing their son Jake at a full-time residential school was the best decision their family could have made. Jake is severely autistic, meaning he faces significant social and communication challenges. He now lives at the Anderson Center for Autism. Autism affects everyone differently. That's why it's called a spectrum. Feller says her son, who is nonverbal, has been living at ACA for nearly 3 years. She says having a child with autism can be an isolating experience for everyone.
I would take him to the playground in Manhattan, right? I would see him be interested in a typical kid, and it was heartbreaking because they're not interested in him and they don't understand.
Tina Covington is the chief operating officer at ACA, which houses more than 140 students and educates 120 adults in 40 preschoolers. Covington says giving children, especially ones with special needs, the tools they need to succeed is crucial.
It creates a lot of stressors on the family. And I think when you come to a place like Anderson, that there are other individuals, there is a community of friends there for them, but there's also just, we help create that consistency and predictability and control over the environment that they may not have had at home.
Before getting here, Jake had attended District 75 schools in Manhattan, public schools for students with disabilities.
We always knew he was eventually going to go live in residential. That was his eventual destiny, which we knew. She told us that even before he needed to. So in the back of our heads, we knew that. Then COVID came, and it coincided with him getting older, his behaviors. Jake has always been a docile, sweet kid, and he is to this day. But he went through a really rough go as a result of everything Amy just said. And he had a really rough go, and COVID was probably the worst possible thing because he lost all structure in school and we were stuck home with literally nothing to do. And that exacerbated his behaviors.
However, Feller says she is worried about her son's future. According to a report by the New York State Comptroller's Office, more than 80 group homes closed between March 2020 and November 2021 due to staffing shortages. She hopes the state and federal government will focus on the needs of individuals in group homes.
You really have to be like an angel sent from heaven to take that job. And it really shouldn't be where they're making, you know, you could be a manager at Target and make more money than someone who's playing mom and dad. And, you know, at 3 a.m, if my son has to go to the bathroom or is sick, they're the one taking care of him.
The Fellers say parents of neurotypical children play an important role in acceptance. They say parents should educate themselves, in turn, educating their children. Covington says reaching out and finding support in community groups is important for both parents and children with special needs.
Just so you know, you're not alone. You know, you have that relief of understanding who you are, and to know that that doesn't change anything, really, but that doesn't change anything about your what you could do or what could your future or how that's going to look, right? There's so many opportunities.
The Fellers say the bottom line is education. Educating people on how others may be different, but also that people with special needs are humans with feelings too. Events to highlight Autism Awareness Month are being held across the region. On April 14th, the ARC Lexington and Saratoga Bridges will hold its annual Autism Expo, a free event meant to provide people with autism spectrum disorders resources and sensory-friendly events. In Schenectady, the Autism Society Greater Hudson Region will host a costumed 5K run walk, and the 33rd Annual Autism Conference is scheduled for April 10th in Springfield. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Samantha Simmons.
And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. You can listen to the Legislative Gazette anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. Look for program number 2414. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina. Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.